Ready to go? Good morning, everyone, and NOAC. Welcome to the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. It's Wednesday, April 2nd, 2003. And at this time, I'm going to open up a public hearing with public testimony on House Bill 5056 as a subcommittee of two. And with that, do we have
start with these two?
Okay, we have Jim. Is it Tomei?
Tori.
Oh, Tori. Goodness sakes, I know who he is. And Laura Pryor. Come on in. We were just talking about you yesterday. Welcome, and always remember in this room, pull the mic close to you.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jim Torrey, and I'm the mayor of the city of Eugene, and I also serve as the chairman of the League of Oregon Cities Transportation Committee.
Good morning. My name is Laura Pryor. I'm the county judge from Gillum County, and I serve as the chair of the Association of Oregon Counties Transportation Committee, and I also serve as a chair of the North Central Act.
I'm good now.
This may be the only time that the cities get to speak longer than the counties because your voice is not very good this morning. So I'm going to take advantage of that. No, she's helping me out with a trip to Eastern Oregon, so I can't be anything but nice to her. Well, first of all, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to us this morning. We're here to talk about the importance of transportation and making sure that dollars flow to those important areas. This isn't in the notes that I had originally put together to say this morning, but I think it's important to bring up. Yesterday, we received notice in Eugene and Springfield, our sister city immediately to the east of us, that the Sony manufacturing company that was built some 7 years ago is mothballing totally their plant with roughly 300 employees. Now, the reason I bring that up in a transportation discussion is that I actually believe that particularly in this session, both on a national level and a state level, that things that we can do to put money into transportation projects this year are also economic development projects. Transportation, in my opinion, is the backbone of our economic base. If we can't move products, we can't produce products and get them to the end user. I am convinced that one of the best things we could do in Oregon would be to find a way to stimulate revenue that would go into transportation projects. And while a number of us are concerned about the cost of government, I'm absolutely convinced that the projects that are going to be developed this year and hopefully in this session will have long-term benefits to our state. So the fact that we produce and build today those new projects does not mean we're wasting money. It means we're investing now, and we're also providing jobs in the future. And the future is not longer than 6 to 12 months. I use an example. In the city of Eugene, we passed some ordinances recently that require that our operation and maintenance programs immediately go out to the private sector for bid, with the possible exception of some engineering, because what we want to have happen in the Eugene area is we want those local companies that provide operation maintenance type services to be able to work their employees today on projects that we frankly, under normal circumstances, might have waited a year or two to do. We're all aware of the fact that if you don't take care of the maintenance problems on our transportation system, the cost to reproduce them new is roughly 4.5 to 5 times as expensive. I want to talk a little bit about the bridge program. I think it's extremely important. And as the mayor of the city that just within the last month has been told that you can't drive these overweight trucks between the bridge immediately to the north of the city of Eugene and the bridge immediately to the south of the city of Eugene, and you have to send those trucks all the way to the city of Bend and turn them around and have them come back to I-5. We've got to deal with those bridge problems. We also have to deal, frankly, with OM&P, and we don't, and we haven't for 10 or 12 years now. There's never going to be a perfect time to deal with it, but the longer we wait, the more expensive it's going to get. I happen to be an advocate of something that I know Senator George is in favor of, and that is that it is the roadbed that we're worried about. And I get in trouble with my city council sometimes saying that, but the fact is we have to make sure that those trucks and vehicles can go up and down those road beds.
I've already assured all of them that when we get that road bed done and those bridges done, that we'll get back to landscaping and bicycle paths. But right now we have infrastructure that's failing.
And I don't want to miss the alternate modes. They become more and more important. Rail and elderly transportation and disabled people's transportation. I want to talk a little bit about something that the Oregon Department of Transportation has developed over the last 2 years, and that is a strong participation of partnership between the cities and the counties and Oregon Department of Transportation. And they are truly working on this as a partnership. And probably the best way I can use to describe this, in the city of Eugene in January, I made a State of the City address, and at that time I asked the county and all of the cities to take all of their monies for maintenance, all of their monies, whichever source they get it from, and put it into one pool of dollars. And I asked Bruce Warner, the chair, but the director of ODOT, if he would consider participating, and he said he absolutely would have someone there listening to the proposal. Now, the reason I bring that up is we have got to find ways to more creatively handle how we deal with our maintenance issues. Nobody cares what color the truck is that fills the pothole. They care about how well the pothole is filled. And that's something that I think we're going to have to do in Oregon and in the counties and the cities. And it's a credit to Mr. Warner and his staff for keeping us in the loop in terms of these things. Does that mean we always agree on everything? No. But it does mean that we get an opportunity to tell them what we think before the final decision is made. We have difficult problems facing all of our communities. I do believe that this is one of the most important things this legislature can do this session, and that is to fund adequately, within the realm of the funds you have available, transportation. We have got to keep our economy moving, and right now it's a fairly stagnant economy, and we need your help. Commissioner, Judge, excuse me. Got to be careful. I'm going to be in her city next week. So.
Be driving in my city. Thank you, Mayor. It's always a pleasure to be able to come and talk about transportation. It's always a pleasure for me to do it with Mayor Tory, because I think in the two of us, you see Oregon's dilemma, a very urban area with the congestion problems and growth problems, and a very rural area whose main problem, the transportation, is being able to crush enough rock to keep it on our dirt roads. I want to take a minute to go back and relive a little bit of history. There was a time when I-84 was a dream. A major road at that time, not a highway, but a road that would run east and west along the Columbia River. That idea was taken first to Washington, to the legislature in Washington, who didn't want to mess with it at all, thought it was a dumb idea. Oregon accepted that challenge. And by doing that, you can see what happened all along I-84. The growth is on the Oregon side of that transportation corridor, all the way out to Idaho. The other thing that happened with that decision was, unbeknown to the people at that time, they created in Oregon the major interchange of the West Coast, and it's right in the middle of Portland, where I-5 and I-84 come together, along that huge transportation corridor that stretches out to the east and to the north and the south. Truckers will tell you that. I'm sure our compatriots here from the Trucking Association would agree with me. I think, again, you're facing a similar challenge today. I'm sure all of us have been beating on you how many years it's been since we've had any transportation funding. But more important, I think, than that, there's been a sea change, and the mayor referred to that. There's been a sea change in the past few years, and maybe it was driven out of necessity, unfortunately. But the three jurisdictions that have responsibility for the streets, the roads, and the highways in Oregon work more now as a partnership than we ever have in the past. It has dawned on everyone that those three jurisdictions have to be able to talk to each other about the nuts and bolts of running the system and keeping it functioning. In the past, there was more division about who's doing what and whose responsibility is where. I think the acts were a step in the right direction, because now you have a way to have a regional look at the system. We really have one system, and we certainly have one system in the minds of the citizens. The acts have allowed us to be able to come together, as the mayor is doing with his folks in Eugene. The cities, the counties, and the state come together and talk about the system within that region. And the regions look very different. You could not imagine that the Portland metro region looks very much like the region out in Malheur or Harney County. So how is the Transportation Commission or the legislature, how are you supposed to be able to figure that out when everybody was isolated, everybody was fractured, and we all came clamoring at you from different directions? The acts were a great idea. And it really worked with OTEA. You saw the Department of Transportation, the regional and the district guys coming in, sitting down with county roadmasters, public works people from the cities, and trying to figure out, how do we take care of this system when we got $10? And it worked. And it worked beautifully. You saw counties and cities putting their own money on the other jurisdiction's system, because it is one system. And where a city street starts, you may have a state highway, or you may have a county road. So it makes sense to be able to work back and forth across those jurisdictions. And it's taken time for us to get there. I represent the Association of Oregon Counties here today, saying to you, the Oregon Department of Transportation is incredibly important, and the budget that you're looking at has such far-reaching ramifications. If you'll think back to what I said about I-84 and how it was created, the Oregon legislature took a horrible gamble and risk, but they believed in the future of this state, and it worked. If you look at it, it worked beautifully. You have the same challenge. I believe that the department has come a very, very long way in the past few years, and we see it. We actually see it happening on the ground. It's not just that it happens over there in Bruce Warner's office. It happens with the district guys that will come out there and work with the roadmasters. Or they'll go into the cities and work with the public works fellows. There's no arrogance left in this system. I don't see it. It's gone. We're all taking care of the same system. And the things that have happened in the past few years, I think, have given us a better shot at using whatever money we're able to get than we ever were in the past. And I encourage you to support the department's budget, because it isn't just the department's budget anymore. It's leverage for all the rest of the system, and we really need it. Thank you.
Questions? Senator Marks.
What recommendations do you have with respect to increasing funding for transportation?
Chair George and Senator Morris, I'm very supportive of the proposal that's coming from the governor's office. The doubling of the two fees. I know there's a lot of pressure out there to reduce that some. I truly am having a hard time understanding the difference between $35 and $40. No one wants to pay more, but I think we get a double benefit from the development of the OTIA-type program that we have here with those dollars, the bonding capacity we have with those dollars. The facilities that we will build are extremely important. The fact that we have agreement between the state and the counties and the cities to share those dollars in terms of the 50%, 30%, 20% for OM&P funding is extremely important. And I believe that the citizens of Oregon recognize the need now to deal with the bridge issue. I'm not sure they recognize to the degree that we do the importance of dealing with the OM&P issue, because it doesn't have the sizzle that the bridge issue does, but the need is certainly there. And then the final thing is I really believe that it's an economic development program right now. We can be putting people to work immediately, doing things that will have long-term benefit to the citizens of Oregon and the transportation system and the economic system of the state of Oregon. So I would be supportive of the doubling of those two fees. I'm anxious to hear one of the proposals you made at a meeting I was at recently, and I said I didn't support it then, but I might be willing to come around here. So that's the gas tank 101.
Oh. Chairman George, Senator Morris, I guess it's no surprise to you that the counties would say we're supporting the largest package we can get out of this session. I sometimes think when I started testifying on transportation 15 years ago in the sessions, I was a redhead, and I'm now decrepit. You tell from my voice, I'm aging. We understand that there's an awful lot of pressure to not, you know, go for a bigger package. But I have to tell you, it's been a long time since we put money in this system. And I know people are talking about, and I certainly support, a multi-session look at transportation. I'll also tell you, having gotten old in this process, I'm not sure that's going to happen. I think the reality is you have so many things on your plate, big issues, big-ticket issues you've got to deal with. If we can deal with transportation this session and get the money out there on the ground, which will happen. The cities and counties can put money on the ground out of transportation for OM&P within 3 weeks of getting money. We could do it that fast. If we can get a good package that'll take us into the future so that we can be working on it over the next few years, that would be the absolute best thing that could happen. That could happen to all of us. We support the larger package, the doubling of the fees. I will tell you what Jim's referring to. I have said we need to have at least a 1+1 gas tax. And the reason I say that is because I'm hearing it. I'm hearing it from people. I have a lot of family in the Willamette Valley, and I live on the other side of the mountains and have some family over there. Where I live, trucking runs our economy. We've got to move 5 million bushels of grain to the river every year, out of just my county. And that goes on trucks. So people know, I have been very open in my own community and in the region of the Act saying, this is what we've got to do. And I'm not hearing anybody complain about it. Everybody's saying to me, our vehicle registration is ridiculous. I mean, it's nice, but we all know it's silly. I mean, we should be paying more. If we could have the package, the largest package possible, we can take care of the system. It's not going to answer all the problems, but I don't think we're going to get more after this year. So obviously we would like you to please stay the course and give it a real look at the largest package possible.
One plus one. Could you explain what you're referencing?
A penny gas tax increase.
One.
I would like to have a penny. Well, it's one plus two. It's a penny for 2 years. A penny now and a penny the next year. Or you could break it up any way you want to. A penny now, a penny in 2 years or something. I would like to suggest that you put that second penny out there a ways, simply because if you're ever going to try to get to a multi-year look at the transportation, you've got to have a reason to come back and look at it other than us just clamoring at you. If you're going to do another penny out 2 years or something, that would be the trigger for you to come back and take a look at the whole thing. If you do it all now and don't do anything out there to bring you back, you won't come back.
I have a question for you, too. Folks that I have that are looking at the, particularly the $500 million worth of borrowed money that's supposed to be going out for projects, they said it shocks them when they look at that as to how few of those projects do anything for capacity, how few of them actually have what we could say a significant effect upon the system. Have you looked at that list, and are you concerned about that?
Well, as it relates to the projects in Lane County, I would say that the three projects that they that received funding from the OTIF fund did everything you just said that they weren't doing, with one being the Beltline I-5 interchange, which is a massively congested interchange right now. The flyover that would take traffic off of I-5 coming from the south and going west on the Beltline will dramatically reduce the traffic impact there. That's the major project that we got out of OTIA. The second project that we got was actually for a smaller community, and I championed that project because it was important that the city of Criswell have access from the west side of I-5 to the east side if they were going to be able to develop to the degree they possibly can their commercial areas. And it's an overpass increase enhancement, and I would say that would have a very positive impact. It is a safety issue. Right now, people who want to walk or ride a bike are locked into probably a 3-foot-wide sidewalk to do both biking and walking. So I would say that was a good project. The project on Highway 126 on the way to the coast was a very, very accident-prone area that is going to be enhanced. I would say those three projects in that area are well served. I wish I could say I knew more about the other projects. I sat in some committees with ODOT folks when we developed criteria and so on, and the counties and the cities and ODOT's folks and the acts all got together and talked about where the most important use of these dollars were. I know that in the Seaside area, I think those folks would say that that project there is very beneficial to that part of the state. I'm sure it's not perfect, but the fact that it was able to be put together during the last session and actually do something, I want to give credit to it. I also would say that the areas where we may not have done it as well as we should, I think provide tremendous opportunity to make some adjustments to what we might do in the future around that. But given the interest rates that currently exist, and no one knows how long that's going to be, we should take advantage of these opportunities, because I was in Washington, D.C. in the last month trying to convince the Congress and our congressmen and women and our two United States senators take some of those federal dollars and put them on the federal system and do it now and hire our people. The project will be here to help our people in our state for the next 50 years. And so I hope we don't scrap the process because there may have been some errors in judgment that took place in the first time around.
Senator George, because I'm from such a rural area, I can't really speak to your question directly. However, I drive here all the time. I mean, that's how I get here. I put miles and miles and miles on my car and myself. and I have to drive through that interchange in Portland. And if I stay with my daughters, I have to get Clarette to McMinnville. So I go through the whole Dundee thing. So I understand all of it. The only thing I can say to you honestly in respect to your question is, I have to believe that the acts worked everywhere. I have not heard out of any of the counties that the acts did not do a good job of sitting down together and making decisions about, we have $10, where does it go? I saw people that in the past have been very parochial and, you know, and really, you know, very thinking to them about themselves, selfish only, saying, okay, I understand in the Dalles, you've got to get that project done. We'll wait. So I saw it work. So if there are people that didn't get what they wanted or didn't think it worked, I would have to say, I can't speak to that because I saw it work. I know it worked. It seemed to have worked all over the state. So I hope you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater because I think it was a good activity.
Thank you too very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for driving all the way over.
You bet.
And welcome to McMinnville. Okay. Oh, we want to do that? We can do that. All right. What I'm going to do right now, and if I'm in, here we go. We're going to ask Craig Greenleaf to come back up, and we're going to try to complete the transportation development budget overview. And if everyone will be patient with us, what I did here was a decision I made. So if anybody wants to yell, you yell at me. I looked at this, and I said, looks like pro-lobby from here on out, unless Betsy Johnson shows up. And so we wanted to complete this. I don't think it'll take too long. We were pretty close to the end of the presentation. So right now, I will open as a full committee, and we will be taking testimony on the transportation program development budget over here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Craig Greenleaf, Administrator for the Transportation Program Development Division within ODOT. And I believe we made it through complete discussions up through page 111 in terms of the presentation document. I'd like to next turn to the issue of performance measures, which are found on page 113 of the presentation document. And talk to you a little bit about the particular performance measures that are germane for our particular part of the organization. On page 113, we talk about two areas where we have performance measures that are specific to the division. The specific notions here are some of the custom products and other products that we produce, maybe a little bit less familiar to you just in the extent of them, but our division is responsible for the background material that supports the production of the Oregon Highway Map. We do that in concert with our communications portion of the department. We also work with tourism in the preparation of the Oregon Highway Map. We also produce reports of various kinds and types. Notably, we do a lot of detailed work around crash data. This crash data reporting is not only for those crashes that are on the state system, but they also cover crashes that occur on the local systems as well. And we have been moving over the last several years away from the hard copy presentation of these materials to more of an internet accessible form. In some cases, some of our publications have moved to CD-ROM formats of publication because they are much more cost-effective to be produced. And we've been trying to reduce the printing costs and the form of presentation of the data in that way. we do specific things that are aimed at particular areas where there are questions, particular segments of the highway system, where we do more specific analysis and try and look at the issues of, for example, crash data that is more specific to that particular segment of the highway. The second area that I wanted to speak to is around the issue of transportation system plans. We have been working over the last several years to produce local transportation system plans. These are plans that are specific to each local government or metropolitan planning area. They produce detailed plans for how these areas are going to be developing the transportation system, what linkages are going to be to the state highway system, what new local streets are going to be created as a result, trying to identify the funding sources associated with those particular projects, and what other transportation improvements are necessary. They vary in detail. Some go quite deep into details of operations issues where new signals will be placed or other traffic control measures will be handled. In other cases, they are of a more general form, and certainly we're trying to tailor this work to be specific to the interests of that particular community, try and make sure that that we're supporting that work. This is principally done through our work with the Transportation Growth Management Program, which is contained inside this particular budget, and that's one of the principal means by which we support the development of those particular plans. As is indicated in the performance... Excuse me.
Senator Dukes has a question.
Yeah, I was curious. We've been doing these for probably 10 years or more now, and the percentage is still fairly low, but we have completed. Why is that? Is it a lack of staff in the local governments, their ability to free up staff to work on this? I mean, it is complex, as you've explained. And what kind of money... I assume we're giving annual grants to GM. How much are those grants?
Senator George, Senator Dukes, the principal efforts there have been running in the vicinity of about $10 million per biennia. Most of that money, some 70% of the effort of the program, is aimed to grant the grant side or to support those particular plans. There are actually considerably more plans in a somewhat, I will call them completed status, than are reflected in the acknowledgement status that's shown here on this particular table. So in many cases, we have plans that have been adopted by the local government but have yet to be fully ratified as being acknowledged, which is the term describing when those plans are approved by the Department of Land Conservation and Development as being fully compliant with the statewide planning goals. But
you have problems with a lot of those plans, don't you? You and DLCD?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
you. You and DLCD have problems with a number of those plans, don't you?
We have had problems in some cases with some plans. I'm hesitant to try and describe in considerable detail, you know, all of the array of reasons why the plans remain in an unacknowledged status. I think that set of questions really is more appropriately aimed at DLCD, who is directly involved in the acknowledgement process. We have had differences of opinion with local government on those acknowledgement conditions in some instances. City of Warrenton is one of those communities that we've had difficulties with. We are working hard, however, to reconcile those differences, and I think we've been, for the most part, working to gain satisfaction with the approach that the local communities have done and tried to, in many cases, provide additional assistance, either through grant dollars or more technical support in support of that work. But we are not fully in control of the decision to move the plan to a full acknowledgement status. Our principal role is to support the work, and we've worked hard to try and move more plans into an acknowledged condition, and we'd like to further perfect those plans so that the reliability of the decisions made in the plans allow us to move projects to completion. That's something that that clearly the department, I think, has tried to put focus on over the last several years, and something that we're trying hard to improve so that the reliability of the decisions made in that plan are ones that everybody in the community and the state as well can rely on to, in order to move those projects to specific completion.
Maybe you can get us at some point more information as to what percentage are in each stage. I was surprised at the low percentage that were acknowledged. And as I said, we've been doing this for, I think, over 10 years now. And now you're telling us we're putting $5 million a year into it. And it seems to me that if a community wanted to, that would be a really good incentive for not hurrying through it. And so I was curious as to what the incentive is to the cities and counties to get these wrapped up. I was assuming, because early on it was a problem, that they just didn't have the staff to be able to do all of this. But I knew that we were helping to provide staff. I didn't realize it was to the extent of $5 million a year. So I'd be real curious as to, one, what the incentives are to the cities and counties to move this along and get this stuff wrapped up, and two, just where all these, I mean, how many are completed but not yet acknowledged, and how many do you or DLCD are you expressing concerns about?
Yeah.
I think it's going to take a while. I mean, this could be the great never-ending story here, and these things are important.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, just to more specifically address the question about status, there are two circumstances here we're dealing with. Some local governments are directly obligated to do this transportation system plan as a matter of the way the law is constructed. They're specifically obligated to produce that transportation system plan. Not all, and particularly smaller communities, are not necessarily obligated to do that, nor are some of the lower population counties in the state obligated to do that. Of those that are obligated to do the work, 74% of the local governments actually have an adopted TSP. Another 23% have a plan that's under development. It's still being refined, but it's in the process of being getting to final resolution. Only 3% of the communities that are obligated to do that transportation system plan don't have an effort underway to complete it. So in terms of targeted effort, we've tried to work with willing jurisdictions first and put the resources principally to those jurisdictions who are wanting to get this work complete. That doesn't answer the acknowledgement question, which I think is a somewhat separate matter.
This is another question for me. Can I correlate the 74% of those who are required to do it and have completed one with the goal we have this year of 32% acknowledged? That's a huge gap, and I'm wondering what causes the gap. I'm sorry for going on, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I mean, it's one area that we're dumping a lot of money into, and we're continually told locally you can't do this until you have an acknowledged transportation system plan. And if you're telling us that 75% of the communities that are required to have a plan right now have an adopted plan, but our goal for this year is only 32% of them acknowledged.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, of the jurisdictions who are obligated to have that plan complete, more than half of them are in acknowledged status. So we have worked very hard. There have been a number of jurisdictions who have chosen to proceed to do the transportation system plan, even though they are not legally required to do so. They've still found it in their interest to do.
32% doesn't relate to those that are required. It relates to all the cities. And
all of the jurisdictions.
Whether they are actually.
Yes. Whether directly obligated to do the plan or not.
Regardless of whether they're. I mean, we could have incorporated city that just said, you know, there's 2,500 of us. We don't need one. Does this 32%, is it of all the cities and counties in the state, regardless of whether they're pursuing one?
Well, regardless of whether or not they're directly obligated to have a TSP.
That's not the question I asked, though. Is it regardless of whether or not they are pursuing a TSP?
Correct.
Oh. Well, I didn't tell me anything there.
If you would prefer, Mr. Chairman and Senator Duke said that we present the data in terms of those that are specifically obligated to do so, we will provide that as in a follow-up.
Then maybe another one of those that are also pursuing
sure.
it so we can see, because it's a good thing to do, and so we probably want to help those who maybe aren't obligated before like to go. Thank you.
We have also a question from Representative Krieger.
Yes, Chair George. Craig, some of the cities are trying to get urban growth boundary changes, and sometimes they work 3, 4, 5 years or longer before they accomplish that. And then here comes land use change. How does that affect the city's plan? How do they accommodate that new in their plan?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krieger, that there are two ways jurisdictions typically will address that set of questions. In some cases, they make the choice to proceed to make the urban growth boundary amendment and later fill in behind that with a more detailed treatment of the transportation issues. Generally speaking, it's our preference that we try and merge those two conversations at one time and deal with the transportation issues simultaneously, because if there are serious difficulties of facilitating the transportation into a particular area, we'd like to be able to get those issues out on the table, because it may ultimately influence the precise location of where that boundary is best located. If one area, for example, is particularly expensive because of topography or if the wetland constraints or whatever, to be able to fit a transportation system into, we'd like that issue to be plain out on the table and centered up for the jurisdiction to make the judgment about at the point they're looking at the question of the urban growth boundary. We try hard to be a participant in those discussions and make sure that those considerations are plainly on the table at the time they're doing that work.
Craig, let me ask this question. You know, if you ask me what is planning, I would say, well, I would anticipate what's going to happen in the future, and then I would organize a plan that would accommodate whatever I was going to expect me to receive. But when I look at it, in almost every other state, I see them doing just that. I see them anticipating, you know, what the growth expectations they have, providing the infrastructure, particularly the highway system, in order to accommodate that growth. I don't see that in Oregon. I see just the opposite. I see them pushing against the wall, you could call it the urban growth boundary if you want to, but us pushing back saying no, rather than providing a vision for what in fact will accommodate the growth that is going to occur, because we know it's occurring. For example, Washington County, Clackamas County, Multnomah County, and of course the Eugene area, as the mayor told us about. Do we have that kind of operation within your control that is actually looking to what systems we're going to need for the growth we know this coming?
Mr. Chairman, I think that we see it as our principal duty to try and align our interests with the acknowledged comprehensive plans, or in the cases of where jurisdiction is proceeding to make amendment to those comprehensive plans, to try and put the issues of transportation plainly on the table, as we would do in the instance that I was representing to Representative Krieger, in order that those questions are on the table. But one of the things that does happen is that the various land use patterns that people select have differing transportation implications. The intensity of uses, whether or not there are jobs created, and the choices between a commercial use and a light industrial use, for example, may have very different trip generation characteristics and therefore have very different implications for the transportation system.
Let me just clean it down. And that is, if you go back to the period of time of Glenn Jackson and some of the old timers, when they looked at what they saw Oregon was going to happen, and we had the Highway 84 and mentioned, but 205, for example, and you look at the plans that were on the books back then, if they hadn't built 205, can you imagine where we'd be? If we didn't have the Glenn Jackson Bridge, can you imagine where we'd be? But also part of that whole system was to connect. They recognized the reality there was going to be growth in the west side of Portland out into Washington County. There was a plan for a system. Do we have any plans like that on the books today?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's really what the transportation system plans are attempted to accomplish. They are a reach of approximately 20 years to try and identify the facilities that are going to be necessary to support the land use patterns that the local governments have selected, and if necessary, where there are going to be new facilities or changes in existing facilities in order to properly support that growth, that's what we're trying to do. We're also trying to work so that our own process of a selection of projects, the work that we do with our STIP work that we do, is aimed to extract projects from those particular acknowledged or approved transportation system plans in order that we can then support those projects as we move forward and support the land uses that have been envisioned by the communities.
I'm going to focus really specifically, and then I'll let you proceed. And that is, when the promise was made, I had a friend of mine that was there in Washington County, and we're talking about the road between Tualatin and Sherwood. When that was put out to the voters and they approved money to build that thing, they were told that was going to be a four-lane highway. That was going to be a four-lane. And but what happened was right-of-way was acquired, as best I can tell when you look at where the property lines appear to be. But what happened, we understand, was the planning portion of this whole plan eliminated the possibility of the four-lane and shoved it all into two lanes. And I was just wondering if that is continues to be the plan. In other words, they couldn't, even though the voters had approved a certain level of lanes, which was four, they ended up with two, and what I consider some of the worst congestion in the state. When I go down that road, I think Newburgh-Dundee is not as bad as I thought it was before. That was actually done because the planning reversed what the people had said they wanted, which was four lanes between the connector of 99W and Sherwood and down to Tualatin. And we're reaping the benefit of it right now, and that is of basically cars and trucks backed up all the way, you know, from one city to another.
Mr. Chairman, I think what we have found is that in many cases, the choice is to, in a sense, put the dotted line on the map of where the new facility is going to be going, is a piece of work that doesn't reach full conclusion inside the transportation system plan. For example, if there are requirements to deal with environmental constraints, if there are problems with taking exceptions to the statewide planning goals or whatever, we're working to try and make sure that those things are complete by the time that transportation system plan is finished, so that we don't have a lot of second guessing, a reexamination of these issues at a subsequent status, because then we reach exactly the circumstance that you've described. We've in a sense made the plan unreliable, even though what was visualized as a four-lane facility, if there are planning requirements or environmental constraints or whatever that haven't been handled inside the decision that's in that plan, then we've made the plan, in a sense, unreliable for executing on behalf of the planned improvement. And it's our agenda to try and make sure that those things reach a completed status so the reliability of the decision being made is one that we can continue to work from and proceed to construct.
Jerry, I think what you're struggling with is a matter of vision. The people that you reference had a vision, and they said, this is what we need for the future of Oregon. And they went out and figured out how to get the money to do it. Mostly it was federal funds, but which we don't have a lot of these days, but they went out and figured out how to do it. That's not how we plan anymore. Now we plan within the box of money that's available and timelines, because the feds tell us that you can't have you have to have a certain responsibility in the STIP. It has to balance. You can't have more plans in there than you have money to do, and there's no siphoning. I've personally been in front of the commission twice begging them to do just some general sketches of Highway 101 from Astoria to Brookings. That would be the highway that slides into the ocean on a regular basis, that floods on a regular basis, that we have to send out alerts saying you can't drive on this highway right now because, you know, or avoid it at high tide. And I've never been able to get them there.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that they knew how their projects would fit in, so that there was some vision for the future on that particular highway that's so troublesome. And we've entered into a system and an agency these days that doesn't do that anymore. We're so hamstrung, we're continually fighting over whether there's enough money to, you know, to do the basics.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't get there. And I don't know how you get there. They have to do both, in my opinion. There has to be the vision, but they still got to fill the potholes and figure out how to fix the things, you know, the bridges and the cracks and all of that.
Well, I'm haunted by the right after the defeat of the gas tax, when the Bi-State Transportation Committee group met at Beaverton. And what the pollsters said that day was, I thought, very revealing. They said, first of all, you got to build projects that people want, which it sure would, well, and we didn't. We have to build projects, you know, that are on time, that accomplish the purpose, and you got to deliver them, you know, within budget. And that is, I think, still a concern that is probably reflected by the bulk of Oregonians, as they see projects built, but the time they're completed are obsolete. And that was the question I had. Where's the vision to deal with the reality of what we know is growth? So that's more of a comment again, and we need to have you proceed.
Okay.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, if I could make just a brief comment. When we talk about vision, one of the things that came home as a reality in the Portland area is sometimes you've got a lot of competing visions. There's certainly ways to solve traffic flow from Washington County into the metropolitan area, but that vision sure competes with the people that live in the West Hills that are very protective of their lifestyle and how they live. From a congestion standpoint, a third bridge across the Columbia River is pretty basic, and I can't think of one neighborhood in Portland that would even remotely consider allowing it to be sited through their neighborhood. And so even from a populist viewpoint, you know, everybody complains about congestion and they don't want it to impact how they get to work or how they do their errands, but they sure don't want the inconvenience and sometimes pretty devastating impact on a neighborhood when you start looking at the specific solutions. And the planning has become just an incredible balancing act when we have the type of growth that we have and then still have to accommodate the lifestyles of the people that are already here and either trying to farm a rural parcel or have got their life savings invested in a modest home. It's a real balancing act trying to do that, and we're going to be struggling with that as long as people keep coming to Oregon. And the last 150 years, they seem to always keep coming.
That was my reality check right there. Craig?
Mr. Chairman, I guess in the interest of trying to be able to accommodate the people who arrived here, assuming there were opportunity for testimony, what I'd like to do is maybe try and sum up a little bit and provide that opportunity for folks. Our efforts are to try and shorten the time period between the conception of a project and when it's executed by making sure that the planning work that is associated with that is done in a completed manner and one that allows us to get to a reliable status. We're also trying to create a higher level of accessibility in the public processes to engage people in looking at the STIP projects. You heard some about that from Mayor Tory and Judge Pryor this morning. We have been working hard to improve the visibility, transparency of our decision making and the partnerships that we're able to execute with local government. We want the work we do to ready those projects so that they are able to be completed. We want to make sure that the data we collect and the way in which we represent that creates a positive and reliable basis for the decision making that we have. We want to make sure that we've engaged the communities that we work with in the project's consideration as we work through them. And the South Medford example that I gave you yesterday about trying to work through the whole array of possibilities that the community thought were considerations. We believe that the budget we presented to you accomplishes those objectives, and that our work on behalf of improvements on the monitoring of the system that is visualized here, the nature of the analytical work that's being requested as part of this budget, the improvements in our partnerships with local government, particularly through our work on the technology transfer issues of the T2 centers, as referenced in the work here, and our further cooperation with the Department of Administrative Services for the cost allocation work that's visualized in this particular project have all been completed. The only thing that's, in a sense, not fully represented inside the presentation form of the document is the proposal that we would actually move some of the staff that are presently at DLCD within ODOT in order that the execution of the Transportation Growth Management Program can be more effectively administered, because the contract responsibilities for this program are handled because they were relying upon federal funds in support of this. We're hoping that we can make the process of contract development and the execution of those grant agreements with local government work more effectively by bringing some of the administrative responsibilities to the Department of Transportation.
We used to have a different structure for TGM, and then the legislature intentionally changed it in budgets, and separated it out. Did we used to have the LCD at ODOT?
Senator Dukes, the program has evolved over several biennia. It's now a 10-year program of effort. The things that we have done are we have reshaped the grant portion of the program. We actually eliminated some of the project supports that we used to do. We have moved incrementally, we've moved some staff to ODOT. Last session, we moved one position to ODOT in order that some of the contract responsibilities, which has been, I think, a help to us in being able to be more effective in the grant administration. Okay. Further back, we created the Transportation Growth Management Advisory Committee, which was an active engagement of stakeholder interest as an oversight function that was specifically noted as a budget note inside the document. There have been budget notes more recently that have tried to more specifically link the transportation benefits of the program. And
did we ever have other agencies housed within ODOT? Or ODOT housed with other agencies as part of this TG?
I believe, Senator Dukes, the question you're asking had to do with the time and period where we had support for the Community Solutions Team that came from...
Go ahead. I can't grasp it. Unfortunately, I've been here through all of it, so the TGM stuff, so and I'm missing something. But we took a deliberate action one session to separate some stuff, and I just can't pinpoint it. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm really through with what I was hoping to line out as a overall presentation of the budget, and certainly would be prepared to answer any further questions which you may have.
Questions? Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, referring to page 6 on the use of public measures, goal 2, the impact of the last goal, 10 years, 2017, the goal is to reduce the rate of wild travel per capita in the Oregon metropolitan area. So how do we accomplish that? What is driving that goal, and how would you realize meeting that goal?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, this goal is something that's been an aim of the progress board and the benchmarking process for some time. The ways in which we have measured it have moved over time. We now rely upon a more reliable and more nationally recognized standard of review. We used to reference this as vehicle miles traveled, which was inclusive of all commercial travel as well as commuter trips and so on. We've tried to be more specific to aim this the features that were probably more in a position to shape the commuter portion of the trips.
It is a challenging agenda, and each of the metropolitan planning areas looks at this in specific response to some of the obligations that come from the transportation planning rule to try and see whether or not there are alternatives that can be placed on the table using a variety of different techniques, transportation demand management in some cases, providing ways that people can carpool, in some cases reliance on transit, looking to other alternatives, even the issue of, for example, telecommuting and so forth presents some opportunities for reducing the total vehicle miles traveled and the demands that are placed on the system by virtue of that agenda. We are responsible for the data portion of this, and that's how come this particular part of the department is in the lead responsibility for reporting that. We work in concert with the Texas Transportation Institute in order to be able to present data that is comparable in a national perspective with respect to this issue. And that's the basis of the way in which that particular element of the performance measures is being shaped and the general agenda that we're trying to work towards. I would acknowledge that it's a fairly challenging opportunity to try and reduce things, particularly when you see better economic times. Often this is one of the things that does increase as we get to better economic climate.
Get an answer in there?
Well, not really. I guess what I'm concerned about is, does this goal actually precipitate a plan to allow congestion to build to the point where it drives people out of their vehicles? And that's the way to meet the goal. And that's kind of what was behind my question.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, we have worked very specifically, particularly with the metropolitan planning organizations, to look at the whole character of what congestion we're willing to tolerate. The Oregon Highway Plan sets certain performance standards for the levels of congestion that are anticipated as a result of the conditions we're working with and the anticipated growth that we're having in the community.
Okay.
It is something that can be modified upon the specific request and with the specific approval of the Transportation Commission, which they have done for the Portland metropolitan area, and they have done in a limited set of circumstances for the Medford area. That request hasn't been forthcoming from the other MPO areas, but we try and make sure that the match between what's anticipated by those local comprehensive plans and the congestion levels that are, in a sense, locally appropriate have been measured and been articulated in a way that we've got a performance standard we can look at, not only in a, you know, a generalized condition for the whole of the region, but in a more specific sense about particular segments of the system. Mr. Chairman, I'm at a point of closure with respect to what I was hoping to lay out today. And I'm, like I said earlier, I was wanting to make sure I'd made it the best accommodation for the people who wished to testify today, if we could.
Appreciate it. Okay. Any further questions? Okay, thanks, Lori. Thank you. And we have Representative Betsy Johnson here. Let's have you come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I understand this is the day for public testimony. I've just come from my own committee, so I haven't been following your proceedings. I hope I'm coming at the right time.
Perfect. Perfect. We just were hoping that you didn't have to leave very long.
Oh, it's fine. For the record, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Betsy Johnson. I'm the state representative from House District 31. I believe I have rather unique qualifications to talk to the committee today about ODOT and the budget. Both as a one-time ODOT employee delivering testimony to the Ways and Means Subcommittee about portions of ODOT's budget, as a member of the Ways and Means Subcommittee receiving testimony about ODOT's budget, and Mr. Chair and other members of the committee, as you know, at times a vocal and outspoken critic, citizen activist, working on trying to change how ODOT was structured and how... Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's the only thing I'm good for.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I had appeared before committees as a vocal and outspoken critic. Yogi Berra may have said it best when he said you can observe a lot by watching. And so I'd like to take this opportunity today to share with you what I've observed about ODOT over the past couple of years. As you no doubt know, Senator Dukes, from her long service on the Transportation Committee, but for some of you who are new with this budget, ODOT is a big and complex business. You will find this agency consists of men and women of the highest levels of dedication and sacrifice. Over the last couple of years, I think the agency has evolved. It has moved from an insular organization, an agency with almost a siege mentality, to one which now seeks counsel, critique, and advice from the people that they serve. The creation of the Area Commissions on Transportation, where I serve in Columbia and Clatsop County, has provided a forum which has elevated the transportation discussion in the state. Our transportation decisions are now better informed due to the ACT process. The ACT process has provided a comprehensive and, I think, transparent approach for those willing to engage in the transportation debate. And certainly the composition of our own ACT is reflective of that, with local elected officials, citizen activists on the issue of transportation, local electeds coming together to work out really a local agent, local area agenda and bring that forward to ODOT. And it's my experience that ODOT has been very receptive in hearing that information. The agency really is seeking opportunities rather than the status quo. And I'd like to give you four quick examples. In the public transit arena, they're aggressively seeking to connect smaller communities throughout the state, as well as working to serve more of our senior and disabled commuters. We've had, as Senator Dukes knows, a lot of trouble in Columbia County particularly, and I'd like to commend the transit staff for how engaged and helpful they've been over a long period of time. In the rail section, they've been engaged in opportunities as well as the challenges of trying to help bring the Lewis and Clark commemoration transportation services together, whether it's finding big reader boards up in Astoria to let people know of pending congestion, or their help in securing the excursion train equipment. The department has once again been responsive, and the investments that they're making are leading to greater dividends in terms of freight mobility and economic opportunity, particularly up and down the short line that extends from Portland to Astoria. In motor carrier, the use of intelligent transportation weigh-in-motion systems have saved the trucking industry money, and I know that a fractured relationship with the trucking industry is being healed over the aggressive involvement of Bruce and his folks. In highway, the division has stepped up and offered new ways to deliver OTIA projects. We're the recipient of at least one in Columbia County. And while it had some difficulties at the local level, the ODOT staff worked very collaboratively with the city folks to get contracts in place and to look for innovative financing. They've moved beyond the pay-as-you-go method and are truly engaged in an innovating contracting approach that includes concepts of design, build, and cost plus time, things that ODOT, I don't think, would have looked at seriously in times gone by. And I dare say that they continue to stay connected and collaborative with the airport folks, even though the Department of Aviation now stands by as its own department. There continues to be a nexus in communication and collaboration to keep air involved in the fabric of transportation. So I've really seen a new chapter being written in ODOT over the last couple of years. There's a new can-do attitude in the agency. The agency appears accountable and open, and it's an agency willing to partner on a better transportation system. The rigidity that once was apparent in the agency now seems to be evolving into a flexible, rational, dependable response organization. Clearly, an agency the size of ODOT is going to trip up on occasion. I think that's to be expected. But you have in the leadership at ODOT now in place folks like Bruce and Matt Garrett and Mike Marsh who will work with the locals, work with elected folks to try to get difficulties resolved and back on track. They certainly have worked, I think, comfortably with a myriad of transportation stakeholders to deliver to the taxpayers of Oregon a healthy return on their investment. I think ODOT is a valuable tool. I never imagined I'd be sitting here when I started my first session coming from being such an outspoken critic. I never thought I would probably be able to sit here and celebrate the accomplishments that ODOT has achieved in the last few years and look forward optimistically to the role that ODOT and an improved transportation system can play in helping to revitalize Oregon's faltering economy. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the moments of your time to share this perspective with you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Carter.
Representative Johnson, a person I have great respect for, and someone I know that is on top of issues regarding agencies in this state. I get a little concerned, and I heard Mr. Greenleaf use this term. Now, have you heard you use it, the whole issue of transparency? I think in your own language of saying how big and how complex the organization is as a business, I don't think it's as obvious as one on the inside might think that this agency is as transparent as you think. And I think one of the things that I think about in terms of when I've heard this committee all have some problems, which you can always have in society, and that doesn't bother me. But the thing is, it's not as obvious to the outside eye as it is to those that are internal to the process. And how do we make the agency more transparent in terms of what the public's view of this agency is, and especially when we look at the issues of right-of-way? I mean, that's one of the greatest issues. Second, I would think maybe first to DMV and the waiting in lines, which you guys have obviously brought down in time. How do we make that transparency an obvious kind of ideal?
That's Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, that's a very difficult question. And it's one that I still think profits from scrutiny by the department and an engaged process with the public. Opinions, as you just mentioned, form very quickly. That hour and 45-minute wait at the DMV erases a lot of attaboys along the way. And I think that Bruce and his team are acutely aware that that can occur. I guess when I use the word transparency, there was a time both when I was an employee of the department and when I first came to the legislature that I found it virtually impossible to get information that I thought at a minimum the legislature should have and at a maximum the public should have. I found it very difficult at times to have the agency step up and say, yes, we've done something incorrectly. And in my personal experience, that kind of stonewalling attitude is melting away. Senator Dukes well knows that we've had some issues up in the district that we both have the privilege of representing where there have been real, honest screw-ups. And instead of this kind of activity and stepping away from taking responsibility, it has been my experience that whether it's the district manager or the people actually on the job, that they were willing to step up and say, we bungled this. In my view, that's a quantum improvement. And so when I'm talking about transparency, and again, I have to now temper it by the fact that as legislators, sometimes we may go to the front of the queue in getting answers, but I still have seen an agency much more willing to engage with the public, to provide information that I think most folks believe belongs in the public realm, at least being willing to step up and deal with the thorny issues like curb cuts and how does a store get access to a highway. They may not always come to the same conclusion, but I found a new willingness to at least engage in the debate. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't have among my constituents or people that I consider friends a little file of things where I periodically come over to Bruce's office and say, gee, Bruce, I think we could do a little better on this. But I have I have discovered a new willingness to at least have the debate. And I think that should be applauded. Administrations passed at ODOT. It was literally our way or the highway. And that kind of institutionalized agency arrogance, I thought, was simply unacceptable. And that's disappearing now. So it's in that context that I use the word transparency. To say that there are not going to be very controversial issues, and I've just come from a meeting where we were discussing how, in a time when we're struggling to find economic revitalization, how do you get rid of the apparent impediments? A store wants to come and bring 200 jobs, and they can't get access to a major highway. How do you work through those, I think, is beyond just the agency and the applicant. I think there are policy implications for across a whole spectrum of issues. But at least I've seen the new ODOT as a willing partner to have the discussion, absent the silo mentality that you don't do it our way, it doesn't happen.
My reason for asking that question has everything to do with the silo effect. And I'd like to think that under Bruce's leadership that we're seeing change. But I think words sometimes define us. And when I hear that word, that word coming from people in the department, it makes me think that you're not as transparent as you think you are.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, I agree with you, and sitting as I do in your seats on my committees, the budgets aren't transparent. I mean, we never as legislators get down to a level of detail where you can really get at some of the thorny problems that I think plague budgeting, plague this building, inform the policy decisions that we make outside. I don't think we'll ever get in our current structure the ability to dig down into those budgets. I at least take some comfort in knowing that the management at ODOT now, if I go to them and ask them a question, I'm not going to get deflected. At least there is a mechanism to get to the answer. But I think all of you as colleagues would agree we're never going to get to a point where we can see all of the things that we get letters from our constituents complaining about. And in our role as an interface between those folks and the bureaucracy, it's nice to know that you've got people that at least will make an honest attempt to give the answer.
Representative Hanson, did you have a question?
No.
Oh, I thought I saw your hand. Any further questions? Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Thank you very much.
At this time, we have three chairs up here, so I'm going to return back to the public hearing, and we'll do that with a tap of the gavel. And at this time, what I'd like to do is ask John Ruppetto, Joe Sharp, and Bob Russell to come on up. Oh, certainly, absolutely. Come on. Please give us your name for the record and proceed.
I can share.
Police.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Would you pull the mic over just a little bit? Thanks.
My name is Lisa Wright, and I represent Crossroads Incorporated and the North American Transportation Services Association, both located here in Salem, Oregon. Excuse me a little bit. I'm a little nervous this morning. I don't do this very often, so bear with me. What we do, what Crossroads does, is we are a private business that provides support services to the transportation industry. In order to assist in licensing and fuel tax permitting issues. So that means that as far as how we deal with the Oregon Department of Transportation, primarily we deal with the Motor Carrier Transportation Division. Our clientele is comprised of trucking companies of all sizes, from your owner-operator, your farmer, to our largest fleet is around 500 trucks. And these are companies that are located nationwide, not just here in Oregon. As a result, I deal with many, many state agencies, not just the Oregon Department of Transportation. The North American Transportation Services Association is an association comprised of service agencies just like Crossroads, located also nationwide. What I'm here today is that I'm asking that that you do approve the budget the way that it is, and specifically any kind of money that is allotted to the Motor Carrier Division. of ODOT. I've been in this business for 10 years, and I can tell you that budget cuts generally in a division like this result in one thing, and that's personnel cuts. I've seen what this does to states. Specifically, we have an office located in the Los Angeles area of California. I deal with the California DMV, which is the motor carrier division's counterpart in California, on a daily basis. The lack of personnel there, when they had their budget cuts, that's the first thing they did, was they did away with personnel. And they have what amounts to a skeleton crew right now. What that means is that generally, if you know anything about the transportation industry, you know that about 44% of trucking companies within the 11 western states are based out of California. When you call the DMV if you have any licensing or permitting issues down there, it is very common for you to wait about 45 minutes on the phone line. When you do get somebody, you get a temporary person who doesn't know the regulatory issues. They can't answer questions. When they do issue credentials, there's oftentimes errors. And there's a general attitude of hostility towards the transportation professional or the trucking company, which is very unfortunate. In addition to this, any field offices that people need to go to, that's a day's activity. Well, I heard somebody say, you know, well, you might have to wait an hour and a half here in the local DMV, which is true. We deal with the DMV also. You may have to wait 5 or 6 hours down at your local DMV in California. It's not pretty at all. In addition to the budget cuts, this caused one other effect, and that is that California no longer has the personnel to enforce existing laws. So their solution seems to be that they keep proposing more and more assembly bills to their legislature, and the legislature gets bogged down in these bills trying to make new laws, which if they enforced the ones that they have existing, they wouldn't have this problem. And the new laws that they create really have no teeth or no power. I could spend several hours talking to you about other states, Illinois, Texas, Florida. I mean, they all have their problems. The Oregon Department of Transportation, their Motor Carrier Transportation Division, I have seen them personally work over the last several years to streamline their process to make it more effective and efficient. They have worked to reduce waits when you call in on the phone. I know that when I first began in this business, that, 45 minutes was pretty common. It was similar to call in California or the IRS. With the aid of technology, many of the essential forms that they need to complete what they need for their licenses and permits can be located on a website and are downloadable. They have a new system this year where permits that they need for their weight mileage system can be accessed through the Internet, and they can be faxed to them or emailed. The Green Light program, which is the Way in Motion, is available to carriers who operate in and out of Oregon. It has reduced congestion on our highways. It has also helped our clientele in the fact that they don't have to stop now at every way station, which is great for them. Oregon has reduced staff where it has needed to. It shifted staff to the main Salem branch and closed some of the outer field offices with some of the services that they need to be more efficient. Oregon is also unique in the fact that it has a weight mileage system that is administered by the Motor Carrier Division. There are only three other states in the nation that have this system in place, and I can state unequivocally that Oregon's management of this division far outweighs any other state. The example that I would give for that is that you must have a credential before you enter this state. If you don't, there's a fine of $295. Your truck gets stopped. In other states, this is not the case. You cannot, in most cases, get a temporary. You have to apply through the mail, wait your 3 to 4 weeks to get it back. And if you can get a temporary, it's a pretty costly thing to get. They do have them at the port of entries, but from my understanding and dealing with our clientele, If you don't have the proper permits going through these other states, it creates quite a bit of congestion on these main interstates that are going through, and also in the way stations. The trucking companies that I represent are well aware of the type of revenue that is generated by this weight mileage tax. And so I think that they expect that when they call the Oregon Department of Transportation, they don't have to wait 45 cents. You know, your average 80,000-pound truck is paying 11.97 cents a mile. That's a pretty good chunk of money for these trucks to be paying. Because of this weight mileage tax, the employees of the Oregon Department of Transportation deal with carriers nationwide. It's not just Oregon. I am told by other service agencies like Crossroads that they would rather deal with the state of Oregon any day than any of the other states. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to express to you how much I appreciate their willingness at the Motor Carrier Division to serve the trucking industry. They really have a customer service attitude. There's not a hostility. There's not the general lack of empathy when there's a permitting issue. And I think that you should be very proud of these people who are representing our state. I've stated before to associations, to even our own clients, and to at other presentations that I have given, that in my experience and opinion, the Motor Carrier Transportation Division of ODOT should be used as a model to other states, as it is effective and efficient in its operations. In my line of business, the professionalism exhibited by this division is a very rare attribute that is hardly ever seen. And I want to make one last point. I heard you say, Mr. Chair, that you're, I believe, from the McMinnville area, somewhere around there. And I know that there's probably some others that represent more rural districts in Oregon, which there is a very large population of small carriers and farming enterprises in these areas, not to mention some of the dirt and rock businesses. A lot of these are ma and pop type of organizations that can't afford to use a service like Crossroads. And so it's very important and essential to their business and for their survival that when they call ODOT that they can reach somebody who can give them the customer service and can give them what they need when they need it. As many of you are probably already aware, the public already perceives state agencies and employees in a very negative light. So my worry is that if you do end up cutting any funds that should go to this division, that would perpetrate the problem of negativity and take away from the successes that this division has made in the last 10 years. So that's why I'm in support of this. And I just want to thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. And if there are any questions, or this morning, excuse me, if there's any questions that you have, I would be willing to answer any.
Lisa, you had no reason whatsoever to be nervous with this fantastic testimony that you have presented.
Thank you.
And do we have any questions for Lisa? Thanks again.
Thanks.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is John Repito. I am the Vice President of Transportation for Winco Foods, and I work at our distribution center in Woodburn, Oregon. And I will be brief in my comments and try to maximize our time. I'm here this morning just to share with the committee my experience with Motor Carrier Transportation Division of ODOT, and specifically just in one general area, our involvement with the Oregon Green Light pre-clearance program. We've been a participant since July of 2000, and originally we enrolled 46 trucks in the program, and today I now have 93 trucks in that program. We travel extensively in Oregon, a lot on I-5 and Interstate 84, and at my request, ODOT checked some numbers and told me that in 2002 we were allowed to bypass the Oregon way stations 28,825 times. Now that's a substantial efficiency on our part, since our trucks do not have to leave the highway and spend times on the way stations. I also believe that there is an issue of a safer operating environment since our trucks do not have to exit the freeway and then merge back onto the freeway. And as I think a lot of us would recognize, the merging is becoming more difficult and dangerous on our highways. In 2002, based on those other numbers, we estimate we saved around 2,402 hours by simply not having to pull into the weigh stations. And we also estimate those savings to us at around $178,000 in our fleet operating costs, fuel, wear and tear, labor, et cetera. So just in closing, I just want to share with you that our company's position is that we like Greenlight. Our drivers really enjoy the services of Greenlight by being able to stay moving, and that I believe that Greenlight is an application of new technology that makes Winco Foods and ODOT more efficient. Otherwise, I would not have enrolled the trucks in this program. So we are very much in support of the division. So with that, I'll answer any questions if you have any.
John, there's no question when you think about the time pulling in, the deceleration, the brake wear, clutch going out, you know, all of the fuel you're going to burn, the time of the driver, it has to be $100,000 savings. I mean, it would be a massive amount of money.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it is a savings of time and money and the safety that goes along with it. It's a good program. I'm glad to have seen that it was developed over the years. We take advantage of it in other states because we operate not only in Oregon but in five surrounding states to service our stores. So I take advantage of it every place that I can.
Chairman George and committee members, my name is Joe Sharp. I'm one of the ag producers that's been mentioned here a few times this morning. I happen to grow Christmas trees, and in 3 to 4 weeks every year we ship about 800 truckloads, semi-loads of trees out of Oregon. So I prepared a statement. Over the past 9 years, ag producers in Oregon have faced increased permit requirements from county and state DOT. In some cases, these requirements were adverse to producers moving their commodities efficiently and effectively and expediently to the interstate highway system for export out of the state. Attempts were made at local as well as the legislative level in the past to simplify and streamline the process. Although gains were made in individual counties, the attempt to bring all of the affected highways and road departments to a reasonable resolution were not achieved. I'm here today to testify that as a producer and shipper here in Oregon, at least over the past few months, we've been provided with a very positive experience by in this endeavor, thanks to the Oregon Department of Transportation staff and leadership, something I never thought I'd see. They brought not only the governing bodies, the producers, and the trucking associations, as well as the nurserymen and Christmas tree growers together, and developed a common sense approach to solving our permit requirements, which allow us to be much more efficient. So for myself and the industry, we applaud this. We support it. We think it's the right thing to do to tie industry and government together to achieve a common sense approach to solving problems. So specifically, I'm talking about overlink permits, that's all, on county roads and movement of our product to the state and interstate system. So we've been using these roads for 33 years. It appears that we're on a track now to probably be more efficient than we've ever been, not only in moving, but also providing important data to the highway department through their willingness to listen, take our point of view. So we appreciate this attempt and bring our support to that today. That's all I have.
So it's good to get that one behind us, isn't it? Because, you know, we thought when we shifted that we were making a good decision, only to find out it was more problems than
we had before.
It didn't work.
One-stop shopping didn't work.
Thanks to ODOT being able to get some common sense back into that process.
I believe so. And I'm here only because I told them I would support them because I was so shocked in what we achieved.
That is the best compliment you could have. All right. Bob Russell, D. Bridges. And let's bring Art up here, too, from the AOC.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I would like to thank you again for allowing my members to go before us talking heads. And quite frankly, I couldn't have said it better than they have already said it. So I'm going to be very brief. I want to make a couple of quick points. The motor carrier division really has two functions. One is a regulatory function, and one is providing service to us for the things that we need. You've heard a lot from our members this morning about the customer service attitude of the motor carrier division. It is outstanding. But I don't want to lose sight of the fact that they are also a regulatory agency. And the effectiveness, which you heard from Mr. Del Ponte, of that regulation is something that's very important to us. We want to improve safety on the highways. We want to make sure that our trucks are operating within the size and weight regulations that we have today. They do that very, very well. They can demonstrate their effectiveness, and they do it with common sense, which is extremely important to us. The third point I'd like to make about the motor carrier division is the management style and the efficiencies that they have been able to develop. Greg Del Ponte, in the time that he has been the deputy director, has just done an outstanding job. Since 1995, he's reduced 77 FTE in that program. 13 of those are in the current budget proposal that I think you heard about the other day. He hasn't reduced customer service. He hasn't reduced the effectiveness of the regulatory program. He's made it more efficient. In part, he's done that by embracing technology. And you've heard a number of stories about the technological advances that this division has made. They are a leader in state government in that sense. I would also be remiss if I didn't make a couple of remarks about Director Warner. Betsy Johnson did an excellent job of sort of giving you a historical perspective and a perspective on the new ODOT, and that is thanks to Bruce Warner. He opened his door to us when he first took over. We meet with him regularly. We talk about the tough issues. We don't always agree. But when we do agree, he gets it done. And we are very appreciative of him and the leadership that he's providing at ODOT and for the state of Oregon and our entire transportation system. And I will stop at that.
For the record, D. Bridges, Oregon Forest Products Transportation Association. I normally come up here to just echo what Bob Russell says, and I'm going to do that. I agree with everything that he'd say. I think more, though, I'd like to echo what Betsy Johnson said. I think I agree with absolutely everything that she said, and especially the part about Bruce Warner, since he came, mending this fractured relationship that the trucking industry had with ODOT, and it's where we are today is light years from where we were when Bruce came, and I couldn't applaud him more for that. I also wanted to echo Bob's comments and the other comments that you've heard here today about Greg Del Ponte. I think I've told some of you individually this, but if you could clone Greg Del Ponte and put him in charge of every state agency, we'd be in a lot better shape. Road ahead. We've got big problems. Everybody's aware of the bridge problem, and that's our lifeblood. Highways are our lifeblood. We need those bridges fixed, and we're willing to, even though we're in just terrible financial straits, most of my industry is just teetering on the edge of bankruptcy, and any increase may tip some of them over. Having said that, we know that we have to cinch in our belts and do what we need to do to fix those bridges. Chairman George, you said something earlier about fixing the infrastructure now. This isn't the time to spend money on bike paths and landscaping. Those are nice things, but let's wait for better times to do those. Let's get the infrastructure fixed, and we want to participate in that. And having said that, I just wanted to inject here a note of caution. Moderation, I think, is the key. Let's, number one, get the bridges fixed, and let's fix some of the potholes and give some money to the counties to help them and cities to help them fix some of the potholes. But the idea of a whole pot of money
to do a lot of nice, neat things that really aren't absolutely critical at this time is I don't think a wise choice. And I'm here to say that I'm going to be supportive of a moderate position here, but I'm going to have to back off in some of the high numbers. I don't think I have anything more to say than that.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, could I ask Burton Weiss and yes, John Chandler to join me?
Yeah. And I'm sorry about that. I glanced down and I saw your name after I had the three chairs filled.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Burton Weist. I serve as the chair of the Transportation Growth Management Advisory Committee, and these two characters with me are also members of that advisory committee. And so I know. I've never had a good choice of friends. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are here in support of ODOT's budget, and in particular the transportation growth management portion. I had planned my 1 minute of all the wonderful reasons for TGM to exist, which I know at least Senator Dukes has heard for 10 years, but I wanted to digress for just a moment in light of Representative Krieger and the chair's questions and some comments by Representative Johnson and others. My company serves as a project manager for U.S. Borax Corporation, which is developing 550 acres in Brookings, Oregon. And I think our work with this project in the last couple of years is a real good example of both TGM and the new change I think we've seen at ODOT. Not too many months ago, when I met with the local elected officials in Curry County and at the City of Brookings to talk about our project, which incidentally consists of a community college site, commercial assisted living, 900 housing units, an 18-hole golf course, and a resort. It's a huge project. And when we used to talk about this just a few months ago, we always made sure that no one from ODOT knew we were meeting, because we viewed ODOT as the problem, not part of the solution. I'm pleased to say as recently as this Monday I was in Brookings, we had a meeting, and there were folks from ODOT there, and we spent our entire time talking about how to make this project work, how to have it have the access to Highway 101 it needs. And I just got to tell you, it is such a night and day change over what has happened in the past that I don't have words to express it to you. And that's a tremendous economic development project for the area of Brookings. And it's going to be facilitated because of ODOT's participation instead of being hindered, which was frankly the history of this project. And TGM also played a role in that. Brookings got a TGM grant. We went through the TSP process, adopted a TSP, which included our project and other folks' projects. And as a result of that, the discussions in the community have not been contentious in the sense of transportation issues, because we dealt with them. And we dealt with them in the public process going through it. So my little corner of the world here and what has happened, I think, is a good example of the change in ODOT's attitude. It's a good example of how TGM can work and how TSPs, getting them adopted, can work and benefit. The advisory committee, and I'll turn it over to these folks, but just for information, I do have copies of our report, which I think you may have, but I'll just pass it out to you. Members of the advisory committee are in there. I think this is probably, when it comes to issues like transportation land use planning, this is probably the only place you'll find agreement. Our committee consists of home builders, commercial industrial developers, 1,000 Friends of Oregon, cities, counties, special districts. And one thing you'll find is that we're all unanimous and united in our support for the TGM program and urge your funding of it. So with that, Mr. Chair, if I may, I'll turn it over to my compatriots here.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and as Burton has indicated, I'm also a member of the TGM Advisory Committee. I'm here to urge your continued support for the TGM program. It is a program that is used by cities and counties as they look at the relationship between land use and transportation.
comprehensive land use plans can only be implemented with a good transportation plan. And through that transportation system plan, we have the interrelationship of land use and transportation so that they both will work and that there is a vision, Mr. Chair, as to how that community is going to grow and the types of infrastructure is what is necessary to help implement that plan. Will transportation system plans ever be finished? I would unfortunately offer that they probably will not be. Because just as the comprehensive land use plan changes, the transportation system plan is going to have to change to help facilitate those changes that take place in the community. Cities and counties have been working on transportation system plans for a while, and I would note for you that with the update of the Oregon Highway Plan in 1999, the Transportation Commission placed new expectations on what they wanted to see out of these plans. Additionally, more recently, in working with the Department of Transportation, they have a vision that all of the land use kinds of issues will be addressed in the transportation system plan so that when projects are identified and move out of the transportation system plan into the STIP, there won't be a series of additional land use questions that can be accessed at other times as impediments to getting projects built in a quicker manner. And we at the local government certainly support that. We feel that that's a very important element for these transportation system plans. So some of the ones that you see today are the ones that are under development and have been developed over the last few years are going to need to be updated to meet those kinds of expectations and requirements. As a member of the advisory committee, are working with my associates and with the department to emphasize the importance of those plans and the fact that there needs to be a priority on those to get completed so we can move forward. We need to get projects built. We need to have the planning and the land use considerations completed so that they can be done in a very effective manner. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Art helped me a few years ago. I had serious heartburn over something I saw happening coming out of the TTM, and that was this idea of forcing all development right out to the edge of the road. We're going to step out of the door, and we're going to be on the sidewalk. Well, that may be nice, you know, if you're going to catch a bus or something, but the other point was that it blocked any possibility of expansion of that roadway to additional lanes in the future. I mean, you'd be tearing down the buildings. Are we still pursuing that kind of agenda to basically redirect a person who's going to develop a piece of property for putting it where they traditionally would have, set back with a parking lot in front, and moving them out and putting them on the street?
Mr. Chair, there have been some proposals to do just exactly what you've indicated, especially in some of the more urban areas. As part of downtown redevelopment plans and those kind of items. I would just, while they may be good ideas and work in some communities, they may not work in all. Through the transportation system plans, the nice thing about the transportation system plan is they are driven locally. ODOT and other state agencies participate in those, but they are driven locally, and so there is a tremendous amount of local input that goes into those. Yes, they have to be reviewed and acknowledged and those kinds of things, but I think local governments at this point have flexibility to accept those kinds of development patterns where they work and look at other kinds of development plant patterns where they may not.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler with Legislative Advocates here on behalf of the Oregon Building Industry Association, the Urban Developers Coalition, and a variety of other private sector groups who have a direct involvement with land use and transportation issues. As Mr. Weiss indicated, I am on the TGM Advisory Committee, have been since its inception, and am a very strong supporter of this program. And for a number of reasons, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'm going to take off on the last question that you asked Mr. Schlack, because that is
one of the things that this program does well. The issue you're referring to, Mr. Chairman, is one of the requirements of the transportation planning rule. It'll come as no shock to anybody in this audience from ODOT. I've been trying to kill the transportation planning rule off and on when I had time since it was adopted back in 1991, obviously without a whole lot of success. What the TGM program does is we're not involved in whether or not that's a good idea or not, but we're trying to make it work. And what I wanted to convey to the committee today is that from my client's perspective, the benefit of the TGM program is it is the one piece of Oregon government, I can almost say that categorically, that has a pro-development focus. It is designed to make development happen. It's designed to make the rules work. Now, I think, as I said, the TPR is a dumb rule. It's on the books. So what this program does is allow my clients to work within it, to figure out how to make it work for them in a timely fashion through the quick response program that's in the handout we just gave you, through code assistance projects that the departments, both DLCD and ODOT, through the TGM provide, of trying to make the system function. Because as you know, from the developer's perspective, the one thing that drives us the most nuts about the land use program is the uncertainty. This program, even though there's been bumps in the road, there have been disagreements, there, at least at the bottom of it, the root of it, is the determination to get to that certainty, to get to an answer. So at least then my clients, as you said, Mr. Chairman, if the requirement does end up being you got to put the store here, we can decide whether or not to put it there, but at least we don't get drugged through broken glass for a couple of years trying to figure out where the store ought to go. The other thing I want to mention is that this is another, I think, a good example of what I hope state agencies will do more of. One of the things we've found, I think, over the years, and the budget crisis helps highlight, is how siloed government is. Any big bureaucracy is, whether it's private sector or public sector, that the agencies work within their realms of expertise, and they need to do that because of the substantive requirements of their legal obligations. What the TGM program does is, between two agencies, DLCD and ODOT, it puts some windows in those silos so they can work together and cross their agendas so they can get to a better result collectively, provide a forum where disagreements can be hashed out, and provide a model, frankly, for other agency working that we're trying to push on other fronts and other bills this legislative session, to how other agencies, whether it be DEQ or Fish and Wildlife or DLCD and EDD or whatever, can work together so that we don't get this insular, we're going this direction and whatever happens outside of this direction we don't care about. We're trying to get away from that more towards a cooperative, collaborative, integrated approach. I think the TGM, I'd submit to you, is a very good model for other ways the government can function in a more efficient, more business-like fashion. I think it's a good program. I think it's deserving your support. I hope you'll give it to it. And with that, I'll hush and take any questions.
Senator Duke.
John, over the years, I've watched the projects that have been going through. And for a while, we wandered a ways away from transportation for a lot of those. And I think the trees and the flowers are pretty, and they really enhance the community. And I think urban land use planning is important. And it's vital for downtown areas and such. But we'd wandered away from transportation. We were just nicely handing out money to local communities because we had money and we could hand it out, and they were happy to receive it. But it didn't correlate too well to transportation. And now, well, I did a budget note a few years ago. And what's your sense? Are we... I mean, I know we're still doing trees and flowers, and I'm okay with that because they really do enhance, and cities can't usually pay for them, although I'll grant you that a good chunk of them die and look ugly afterwards, but they look nice.
Pictures of those.
Are we focusing, I mean, are we at least trying to tie it into transportation at some point these days?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, yes, we are. Okay. And I think, well, I believe you're right that there was some fuzz of the focus, shall we say. I think there's several things that have happened. I think the budget note that you put in certainly helped as part of the TGM's discussions on focusing back and making sure had that as an agenda item. And Mr. Warner's not going to fit through the door if anybody, too many other folks say nice things about him, but having a change in leadership at ODOT has been a dramatic, dramatic change. And frankly, at the risk of being somewhat impolitic about it, having a change in the center office has helped in terms of the direction that this agency was given. In another bill on another forum, in somewhat joking fashion, because Ledge Council won't draft anything this direct, I had put in a clause that when we're all said and done, ODOT had to actually build a road now and again. somewhat editorial on my part, I suppose. And I think if Ledge Council would have put that in the bill, we'd all know exactly what we're talking about. But I think there has been a combination of factors that nothing functions in this state economic development-wise without good roads, without transportation connections, without freight mobility and building, you know, goods and services, all of that. And to the extent that we've got away from that a bit onto other important but not necessarily first-tier objectives, I think that's changed. And I think we are now back to a position, and particularly with, again, with the focus of this program, but one of the things that our advisory committee has done, I think has been part of the success of this program, frankly, is the outside look, the third-party eyes looking at a program. And it's taking nothing away from the bureaucracies at all. The agencies are very well-staffed, and they have good people. But all of us benefit from another set of eyes looking at what we're doing. And I think we've been able to help collectively, not any of us individually, but the collective effort of bringing it back to transportation, the purpose of the transportation system, and then what falls from that, whether it be urban design, trees and flowers, whatever, is supportive, not primary.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, if I can just add one thing. We did more than just talk about it in the sense that we actually changed the rules on how we look at these grants. We also prioritized them, so we gave grants to people who had mandatory things that they had to do. So if you were mandated by the state to take certain actions, those people got higher priority than people who just wanted to do something nicely. And we did that to react to your budget note, and we also did it because of the shrinking. Our funds have been shrinking now for, I think it's the third biennium. And with the decrease in funds, we tried to concentrate them. So we have reconcentrated our, we've changed our scoring system and all kinds of things to make sure that this dealt strictly with transportation first, mandatory program second, and then flowers are really a distant third in our program right now.
Thank you three very much. We're running a little long here. It's not your fault. And what I'd like to do right now, we have three people, and we have public hearings that are going to be conducted next Wednesday and Thursday. Are there any of that three that are still remaining on the list that that cannot be here next week to give public testimony? You come back. Gary, let's get you up here. Lieutenant Gary Miller, Oregon State Police. You get priority because we want you back out on the road. See?
Thank you.
As the troopers get fewer, we get more sensitive to making sure of it.
Thank you. Good morning. Chair George, members of the committee. For the record, I am Lieutenant Gary Miller. I'm the Assistant Director of the Patrol Services Division of the Oregon State Police. It's a pleasure to be able to speak today on behalf of the Oregon Department of Transportation. I was probably more specifically going to talk about the Motor Carrier Transportation Division, but I think my comments will be very brief. They apply just as well to the Transportation Safety Division, the Operations Division, whether it be Doug Tindall, Troy Costales, Greg Del Ponte, or Director Warner himself. You have my comments, and I think I will just stray from them and be very brief and just tell you my 24 years on this agency. I've worked as a trooper in Eastern Oregon, a sergeant in the Willamette Valley, and throughout the state, many locations and many positions. Over the last 2 years, I have never seen the relationship as good as it is now. There's some really good things happening between the Oregon Department of Transportation and the Oregon State Police. There's some examples listed, but just let me say a real one just lately. We ran into some problems with the recent budget reductions. It caused us a technical problem. We met with people from the Motor Carrier Transportation Division. We communicate quite well. We worked together and fixed it with the use of their people in the field, directly contacting our people in the field, and it fixed the problem. It's happened a number of times. And I think what's happened is, in this day and age of premium accountability, I really can think of no better example that demonstrates the cooperative spirit of a true partnership than the working relationship of these two agencies. I think you may look at who's the winner out of this, ODOT, OSP, or somebody. The winners are the people, the public, the people out there in the road. With everybody truly working together, we can do it, and people can get to their destinations safely. And with that concludes my testimony. I'd be glad to
answer any questions that you may have. Thank you very much.
We like to hear some good news in this building. Nancy, would you like to come up and...
Good morning, Chair and committee members. I'm Nancy Kreshar, and I'm the City Engineer and Public Works Director for the City of Oregon City. And I would like to first thank you and the state and ODOT for providing Region 1 and District 2B ODOT staff to us, who we work with on a daily basis. And we established an outstanding partnership with those individuals. I also want to thank you for the opportunity to be able to come here and support a modest and much-needed staff increase, and which will help improve operations in the local agency program budget. I've worked for the City of Oregon City for about 7 years now, and have had the fortune to be directly involved in 5 or 6 local agency projects that receive federal funding that is, of course, administered by the state. I trust that all of us readily acknowledge the importance of a viable transportation system that benefits all travel modes. The city is very concerned with all travel modes and our economy that benefits directly from a good transportation system. The system, as we know it at the local level, relies heavily on federal funding that's distributed through the Transportation Enhancement Act, and distributed for us through Metro and then administered by ODOT. This system, the transportation system beyond that, is also going to soon benefit from the OTIA bonds that were, I think, in my opinion, approved by a very enlightened legislature 2 years ago. This is going to help a lot in terms of, although we didn't apply for any funds directly, we saw the need for other regional projects that were really extremely important. I would say that a lot of them were for expansion of the system, not just beautification. In fact, I think most of them are going for expansion, which really directly helps the economy. Now, when we get awarded federal or state funding, we feel like our project has been competitively selected for its merit. They always are selected based on regional and statewide benefit. And this means that not just the local agency or the local cities benefit from the project, but many, many, many will experience gain from these projects: commuters, freight, business, tourists, and pedestrians and bicyclists. These are clearly important projects for Oregonians. And to use the funding, the local agency, the city, first has to enter a cooperative agreement with ODOT. These are legal binding documents that really set the responsibilities of the state and the local agency regarding sometimes millions of dollars. So this is very important for the cities, which have very limited funds. So we're committing ourselves incredibly in these agreements. And so we share the responsibility then from there onward for adhering to the regulations and administering the funding in an accountable fashion. And we need to complete the projects on time, on budget, and also meet just an amazingly rigorous set of rules that are established by the federal government in spending transportation dollars. But ODOT and the city work together directly as partners through this project. We rely on one another to help each other out, figuring out all the steps we have to go through. And it's, in my case, I think we've had some pretty successful projects. The same project, though, down to the people that are benefiting from these projects, it also has to survive public scrutiny, especially during anxious right-of-way acquisitions, and certainly during those construction inconveniences. We have many complaining people when they're stuck in traffic due to construction. Time is of the essence. Public benefit is of the essence. And the community is anxious to see their project emerge from a concept to completion. This takes adequate staff and experienced staff, both at the local level and at the state level. As I said before, we really rely on each other. We can only offer up so many staff you know what our situations are relative to funding limitations. And ODOT, I think, delivers, at this point, darned efficient services to the city for the local agency agreements. We work together to shepherd these projects through completion and have to make sure we're accountable for critical design standards to make them safe and to make sure they last 20 years. We have to adhere to the property acquisition regulations to make sure that people are properly paid for the money we need to take from them. We have to protect the resources. And there are always a multitude of unique issues that come up that arise with each project. The regulations that we have to meet that are set forth by the federal government include things that I feel are ultimately important, that is preservation of our resources, whether they be historic, cultural, environmental. And we also have to go through the EC process, the making sure we're doing alternatives analysis for environmental, social, energy, economic issues. And I think my point is that there are a lot of T's that need to be crossed and I's that need to be dotted to ensure that we're spending taxpayer dollars in an accountable fashion. And yet we're still meeting the capital improvement projects that are set out in our TSPs. I'm happy to let you know we do have an acknowledged TSP in Oregon City, and that process went fairly well. Beyond the planning stages and the design stages of the project, the ODOT local agency staff and the city continue to partner through the construction phase. We have to make contract decisions. Again, we're spending sometimes millions of public dollars, and we are responsible for making sound contract decisions. We have to assure that the contractor delivers a construction product that satisfies the community and stays within public contracting boundaries. There's another huge complicating factor. So this entails negotiating change orders, towing the hard line often, and ultimately always being fair to make sure that private contractors and their suppliers, laborers, and product manufacturers also see the benefits of the public works project. It's a fairly complex network of folks that work together, benefit, and pay for the projects. These are all people that are benefiting but paying through their taxes. So what I want, the point I really want to make is that we really rely on ODOT, and likewise, I think we provide valuable project management staff to ODOT because we really run the project and they assist us, but we do it together. There is no doubt that given the merit of the transportation projects currently funded, and I do believe they are meritorious, they've gone through a lot of scrutiny, at least within our metro region, but it is essential to deliver these projects without delays that would be caused by insufficient staffing. When I started in Oregon City 7 years ago, there was one local agency liaison for, I guess, all of Clackamas County at the time. And the first federal-funded project I worked on was really pretty dismal. It was painstakingly slow. I know that, and with all due respect to the people that were involved at the time, I know that paperwork, plans sat on desks to be reviewed for weeks. The intergovernmental agreements at that time would take literally months to generate, send back and forth. And then about, I would say, around the year 2000, we started seeing a much increased efficiency and deliverables from the ODOT staff. And I do know that they did increase the staffing at Region 1 to some extent. Now we had our local agency liaison, who's been very helpful and a dream to work with. He started just focusing on a couple of the cities, and he still had tons of projects to work on, but we received much better service. With the OTIA funding, which I told you before, I think it was a really good decision that the legislature made, we see more projects, and there are are a lot of small projects being funded with the federal money. So the cities, at least in our area, we probably have 25 projects coming online every other year, which takes a lot of time from the ODOT staff to handle and be accountable for all the federal requirements, ultimately being accountable to the taxpayer. So with these increased number of projects coming forward, with the benefits I've seen of providing increased staffing to move projects along at a better rate so you don't wait and wait and wait, which I know we've all heard people complain about, you know, where's the new pavement? I think that based on that, I would truly hope that you will support these additional positions and see the benefit that the entire state will see from these positions. Thank you very much, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you.
We will close the public hearing, and with the tap to gavel, we'll be adjourned.